Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Friday, April 24th. Hello, and thank you for tuning to Africa Link, your window to the stories making headlines across the continent. I'm Crispin Mwakideu in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, the EU is to triple resources for its Mediterranean Triton border patrol, but Amnesty International is calling for more.
We need a fully fledged search and rescue humanitarian operation in the high seas. It needs to very specifically have the right number of boats and the right type and size of boats in the right places.
Thousands of South Africans in Johannesburg protest against recent attacks on foreign nationals.
All of us are Africans. Xenophobia is evil, is satanic.
And mentally challenged children in northern Ghana face neglect and other human rights abuses. A story coming up on our human rights segment. Stay tuned.
Top story.
We want to move quickly. Those were the words of German Chancellor Angela Merkel after EU leaders held an emergency meeting to discuss the migration crisis. Europe's bloc agreed to triple funds for its Triton Maritime Border Patrol to the tune of 120 million euros. The EU also plans to change Triton's mandate to include destroying boats used by human traffickers. Will that be enough to stop the migrants from crossing the Mediterranean? Assumpta Latus put that question to Ivana McGowan, Acting Director of Amnesty International's European Institutions Office.
Amnesty International's report, released only yesterday, documents a very important point. At the time of those negotiations, some member states were claiming that Mare Nostrum, the search and rescue mission, wasn't itself a pull factor. There has been a dramatic increase of people coming since the beginning of 2015, despite the fact that the spiraling death toll and despite the fact that there is no fully fledged search and rescue operation in the high seas. What this tells us a lot is about the push factors. People are fleeing poverty, persecution, war, and irrespective of those factors, still risking their lives to take the boats. In response to this, then, what we need to see is a reinstatement of the very least Mare Nostrum. It was a huge mistake to ever even consider cutting that. What they should have actually done at the time is increased it.
What could be the best way to solve this problem?
So we need a two-tiered approach. We need a fully fledged search and rescue humanitarian operation in the high seas. It needs to very specifically have the right number of boats and the right type and size of boats in the right places. The second layer of this issue, of course, is the lack of alternatives. The current policies and migration policy of the European Union, the fact that you cannot access asylum over land borders is a serious issue that's driving migratory flows across the deadly Mediterranean. The dire low number of resettlement places offered by European Union countries is also another factor. We need to also look at a more liberal approach to family reunification, and that's even possible under the current Dublin regime, where you could actually take on a case-by-case basis what are the other extended family or maybe community connections that a person would have in a third country.
Where do you see African countries in all this? What African countries can do to participate in solving the problem?
We, Amnesty International, is of the view that we need to look at the reality of the situation. Libya, the state, is in absolutely no fit state to help. There's not a viable government with any work functioning institutions, so it would not be reasonable in that case to look at Libya. Neither Egypt nor Tunisia have adequate or functioning asylum systems in place. So obviously, in the immediate short term, in terms of saving lives in the next days, weeks and months, it is up to the European Union and member states to immediately reinstate a fully fledged rescue operation.
Ivana McGowan, Acting Director of Amnesty International's European Institutions Office. The EU has been criticised for not doing enough to prevent the deaths of hundreds of migrants. This year alone, more than 1,700 people have drowned. Italy, which is considered a frontline nation, has repeatedly called on Europe to expand its naval patrol mission. And one Italian town caught in the refugee crisis is Catania. DW correspondent Megan Williams was there this week, and as she reports, not a day passes without the issue of migrants being raised.
It's In the small Sicilian port city of Catania, where thousands of migrants arrive each month, protests like this one are almost a daily occurrence here. Citizens outraged by what they say are unnecessary deaths at sea caused by a Europe that doesn't care. Among the protesters is 17-year-old Anjuman, one of hundreds of boys who have arrived in Italy on their own. He left his parents in Gambia and alone made his way to Libya. There, 11 months ago, he paid traffickers $200 and squeezed into a boat with 90 others. Luckily, they all made it. But he says he wonders why Europe is unable to save so many others like him.
A lot of our brothers are losing their lives in the sea. And sometimes you feel that because of the negligence of the rescue service that people are dying, because all of them died just like that. How is that possible?
It's a question he's hardly alone in asking. For months now, since Italy canceled its large search and rescue mission known as Mare Nostrum due to cost, it's been urging Europe to replace it. The EU Triton operation is a border patrol one. With fewer ships, that have not been enough to save all those in sinking boats.
Si fa mettendo l'alto rifugiato delle Nazioni Unite in Niger, in Sudan, si fa intervenendo nelle terre.
But along with the calls for more rescue ships, Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi also says Europe has to do far more to help Italy target human traffickers and process refugee claims. Italy's doing its best. Just days ago, Palermo police announced the arrest of 24 men accused of human trafficking. And after talking to the 28 survivors of the boat in which 850 people died, police arrested two of them, a Moroccan and a Syrian, both about 30 years old. Giovanni Salvi is the head prosecutor for Catania, the port through which two-thirds of Italy's rescued migrants passed through last year. As a result, Catania is also where most of the human trafficking cases in Italy are dealt with. Salvi says the number of arrests they've made is a drop in the ocean. Catania prosecutors try to target the heads of criminal organizations who are mostly based in Africa. He says Italy has identified three heads of Egyptian trafficking networks and asked Egypt to arrest and extradite them. But he says while the number of trafficking cases grow as more and more migrants arrive, his office has received no extra money or help.
L'anno passato sono arrivati, come vi ho detto, circa 100.000 migranti.
Last year, about 100,000 migrants arrived in the port of Catania, which created a huge amount of work for the magistrates here. We already have a tough time trying to fight organized crime here in Catania. Neither the magistrates nor the police have been given extra support in trying to go after the traffickers.
Salvi adds that police, too, are overwhelmed in dealing with the asylum requests. This leads to long waits for migrants staying at holding centers here, which puts them at greater risk of being exploited by local criminal groups. A vicious cycle, he says, that can only be ended by speeding up the asylum request process. 17-year-old Adjuman agrees. After almost a year, he says he doesn't know how much longer his request for refugee status will take. Like the dozens of other teenage boys staying in the migrant center with him here in Catania, he's bored and restless and poor and wants to get on with his life.
And I want to be somebody very responsible in the future. So I don't want to be somebody being useless. I want to be somebody useful that the world can talk about me tomorrow. Build my own family, take care of my mom and dad. My brothers.
A dream that until Italy gets the help it needs from Europe in targeting traffickers and processing asylum claims, that will remain just that.
Megan Williams in Catania. And you can listen to a longer version of that report in Inside Europe on Sunday. And beginning Monday to Friday next week, Africa Link will bring you a special series on migration. So don't miss out.
Africa Link. Every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Zuma to the rescue. South Africa's President Jacob Zuma will today hold a meeting with leaders of foreign nationals. Zuma has been seeking a solution to the violence on migrants which has dented his nation's image. Thousands of South Africans thronged the streets of Johannesburg on Thursday to protest against xenophobia. Tuzo Kumalo reports.
Locals from all sectors of the country and foreign nationals from different countries marched hand in glove, all saying no to xenophobia. One of the organizers of the march, Andy Mashaile, chairperson of the Gauteng Provincial Community Policing Board, hailed the march as a great success, saying the message has been driven home.
All of us are Africans. Xenophobia is evil, is satanic. And we are saying to other nationals from other African countries, let them feel safe. We are here to support them. They belong with us, and the police must protect them, and the police will protect them, and the police are protecting them.
Matthias Makonye, one of the thousands of South African nationals who joined the march, said foreigners are more than welcome in his country.
I want to tell people from Africa, as we are here, we are one. We mustn't fight against each other. We must love each other and live together.
The marchers demonstrated oneness in spirit, in their message, as well as in music, as evidenced by their dance and song accompanying these drums that were brought by a group of foreign nationals from Ivory Coast. The marchers' determination to end xenophobia impressed Mark Bafou, chairman of the African Diaspora Forum and key organizer of the march.
The migrants in South Africa are happy to see that their brothers and sisters in South Africa are standing by them to say no to xenophobia.
President Jacob Zuma sent his ministers all over the country to engage communities against xenophobia. But not all people are convinced enough is being done, like this Zimbabwean national, Thubelihle Ndlovu.
I think it's a good move, even though it's late. And personally, I think this is just temporary. The moment these soldiers and police are removed from the townships and the hostels, I really think that xenophobia will continue.
However, the majority of peace-loving South Africans and their government say their current actions against xenophobia will no doubt change the perception of those countries already looking at South Africa as a xenophobic nation.
Tuzo Kumalo in Johannesburg.
Human rights.
This week's human rights story takes us to northern Ghana. Children born with mental health conditions such as autism or Down syndrome, which may change the way they look, are often considered evil. Some families are prepared to poison them rather than nurture them. And other parents prefer locking away such children, completely neglecting their needs. And this goes against Ghana's constitution to protect the rights of each child. As Maxwell Sook reports from Tamale, human rights campaigners are fighting to change such attitudes.
Different from thoughts to walks, there's a difference. In look and work, there's a difference. But not in evil.
Mwafua's Zephyr Cecilia is rehearsing a poem she wrote about children born with deformities. Cecilia is a poet in Tamale and the mother of a 3.5-year-old Opoku, an autistic boy who lives in a world of his own. Poor verbal and social skills and repetitive behavior are characteristics of autism.
How would you feel if teachings give understanding and taunt you like a ghost?
Cecilia says she was nearly influenced by her elderly sister to give Opoku away to be killed because he didn't behave normally.
I gave birth to my son. I knew that he wasn't anything but a human being. And my elder sister said he was a snake and that I should agree, so that they sent him to some traditionalist somewhere so that they can just go and see him off.
But Cecilia decided to keep her son, even though she was informed about the consequences of keeping such a child. There is a widespread belief that
they are spirit children. When you give birth to them and you do not send them to the spirit beyond, you're going to get many problems. I told her no. I don't believe that. I'll get pregnant for 9 months, give birth to a snake.
In many parts of Ghana, children born with neurological conditions who are mentally impaired in some way are considered to be evil and, if unlucky, may be killed with poisonous herbal concoctions or locked indoors for life. But this violates Article 17 of Ghana's constitution, which says all persons are equal before the law. Steve Azantulo is the director of Ghana's Commission on Human Rights and Administrative Justice in Tamale.
As a commission, we treat all children, whether you are disabled, whether you are deformed, or whatever deformity or disability that you have. You are a child, and the law protects you. You are supposed to have the same rights as able children.
Ahmed Alima Saibu in her house. She is a 70-year-old herbal doctor in Tamale. Alima uses her herbs to treat childhood ailments, such as children born with big hairs, which is widely believed to be one of the signs of an abnormal child. The herbal doctor said her work is to cure, but not to kill.
When you see a child with a big head, some may be sick and others are just evil. But when they bring such a child here, I try to treat it. And if it doesn't work out, I tell them to go try somewhere else.
When you are eating food, or when you are about to eat, what will you do?
You wash your hands.
You will wash
your hands.
Why do you wash your hands?
This is a school for children born with such conditions. When I arrived, the students were being taught about the importance of personal hygiene. Their teacher, Alhassan Zakaria, told me their aim is to help the children take care of basic things on their own.
We want them to be relatively independent. Some of them actually depend on people, on toileting, people on eating, people on so many daily activities. So when they bring them here, we try to give them training so that they can really depend on themselves.
This is a step in the right direction, but there are still people like Ayempoka Akologo who believe that such children should be eliminated.
It's better to do away with such children than keeping them. I don't see the relevance of keeping a spirit that can cause you misfortunes.
It's different, and there are no exceptions.
But for mothers like Amafua Sefa Cecilia, it's time to stop murdering children born with deformities in the name of outmoded customs and traditions.
So lend a hand, wear a smile, give a hug, and know their nature. Give no defection signals, just affection.
Maxwell Suk in Tamale, northern Ghana. You're listening to Africa Link, live from DW Studios in Bonn, Germany. Let's now turn our attention to Ebola. Though the number of infections has reduced considerably, the worst Ebola outbreak in history is far from over. 1 year on, more than 10,000 people have died as a result. Medical charity organization Doctors Without Borders, MSF, has been taking stock of the situation. At an Ebola conference held in Berlin, MSF has been seeking answers as to how a new catastrophe can be prevented. Heinrich Kiesel was present in Berlin, and his report is now presented by Eunice Wanjiru.
When staff members of Doctors Without Borders talk about their fight against Ebola, the word shock often comes up. 1 year ago, the NGO warned people about an infection in West Africa of a kind not seen before. Tancred Stöbe, president of MSF Germany, said they were shocked and partly overwhelmed by what they faced.
We were the first to sound the alarm. We tried to send our staff there early. We have experience with other Ebola epidemics. But looking back, we are very critical and say we should have mobilized more of our staff even earlier. We were torn between individual treatment and the need to contain Ebola as an epidemic. All this was overwhelming for us. We could not set up our own clinics in some parts of West Africa because we just didn't have enough personnel.
There were more than 20,000 people infected and almost half of them died. The doctors in the treatment centers had to send the sick away, knowing that they would in turn infect others. 14 of Doctors Without Borders' own staff died. Ebola is proof of how badly prepared we are despite globalization. It is especially embarrassing for the rich developed countries that their response only really began as cases of Ebola stirred up the fear that the disease could spread outside Africa. International aid organizations underestimated the situation. Olushayu Olu is the World Health Organization's Ebola Response Team Coordinator in Sierra Leone.
I mean, definitely. I think the international community was a bit slow. And eventually when we came on board, I think also we really did not understand the sociocultural context in which we were working. So I would say definitely there were issues there.
Health systems in the affected countries were weak and the disease quickly spread. At the same time, efforts by governments to contain the disease failed due to mistrust from the general public, rumors and fears. By the time public measures and communication strategies had been coordinated, thousands had died. The latest outbreak is not yet over. Moses Masakoi, the case management director of Liberia's Ebola Task Force, says the fight continues.
I describe the current situation concerning Ebola
as an ongoing battle to fight until every country gets to zero. Currently, my country seems to be ahead of the two countries, but reaching zero and maintaining zero for the next 42 days is just one of the first steps towards ending this human catastrophe.
In the past weeks, the number of newly infected people has constantly decreased. Liberia has almost reached its goal. The medical answer to the threat of Ebola is still being awaited. Promising vaccines are being tested.
That report was written by Heinrich Kiesel.
Your say.
And Sela Oneko has been monitoring Your Say this week. Sela, what do you have for us?
So this week, two topics have caused discussion all over Africa and Europe. One, the xenophobic attacks in South Africa, and two, the migrant tragedy in the Mediterranean Sea.
Yes, the boat journeys from Africa to Europe have always been happening, especially during spring and summertime. But last week, the death of nearly 800 people, according to the UN, and another 400 the week before, has really brought the whole situation to a climax.
Yes, and we got mails and responses on Facebook with people discussing who is actually to blame for this tragedy. So this one from Genawa Fetene from Ethiopia says, "Whatever the history, it is the corrupt and brutal government officials in their homeland who are responsible first." And there are other people who are saying, "Blame the ships or blame Europe for supporting corrupt African leaders or supporting the Arab Spring." One of such comments comes from Rami Mohammed, who writes, "Europe is paying the tax of supporting the extreme religious maniacs in the Arab world." And another post here from Shiro Mark says that she understands those who are fleeing from war in Syria, but she also reminds us that the migrants are not coming from all countries in Africa, like South Africa and Kenya, for example.
And just a quick reminder that we edit those comments to ensure they conform to Deutsche Welle's editorial standards. And Sela, you say the other topic of discussion was the xenophobic violence in South Africa.
Yes, and just like with the migrants, we've had answers from various corners of the continent on this. So Skinner Kadamanja from Malawi writes, "As a regular listener of Africa Link, I am deeply concerned with what South Africans did to people from other countries. The presidents from SADC should meet and discuss." And here is another mail from Samuel Mismengo, who I gather is a foreigner living in South Africa. And he warns, "The world is watching. A genuine African discourse is needed. This has gone beyond the acceptable."
Well, I guess President Jacob Zuma is well aware of the challenge to rebuild his country's image following the anti-immigrant attacks. And is that all, Sela?
Well, we also have one more mail saying, "We Nigerians have decided to stop using MTN telecommunication and DSTV if the attacks continue." It goes on to say, "If you could remember, Boko Haram was never expected to be what they are now. And this is caused by the reluctant reactions of the Nigerian government." That was by Aliu Mohammed Al-Kasim. And that's all from me, Crispin.
Thank you very much, Sela. And we appreciate all those who contributed to this week's USA. Remember, you can send us your responses to the stories and articles via text message to country code 49160957 59510, an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Your Say will be back at the same time next week.
Africa is changing. Keep up with the pace. Tune in to Africa Link.
And as always, before we end, here is another reminder of the stories we've aired for you in this edition of Africa Link. European Union leaders have agreed to triple resources for the bloc's maritime patrol mission to the tune of 120 million euros. Thousands of South Africans have been protesting in Johannesburg against xenophobic violence. And human rights activists in Ghana are calling on parents to protect the rights of mentally challenged children. Well, we've come to the end of the show, but for more news on the continent, just log on to dw.de/Africa. Africa Link will be back again on Monday. From me, Crispin Mwakideu, have a pleasant weekend.